We're not just trying to get checks, right? Of course, we're trying to get paid, but I want to get paid in a way that allows communities to come together and tell these stories that do matter. So yes, there's tons of that in these stories. And these are the projects that move forward. It's projects where you're like, this would be really neat. Those ones don't survive. I'm asking people who are busy making things to make my thing with me. And if it's just a thing that gets a check, they can get that from somebody else.
Welcome back to the Ben and Rich Show. I'm meeting with Pete A. Turner today. And check this out. Pete has actually done over 1,000 missions outside the wire. He's worked internationally for over 20 years, and he's taken this experience of working behind the scenes with our military to now being an executive producer and the host of the Break It Down Show podcast. He is the founder of the Ground Truth Center, and we talk about everything from the Taliban. We talk about espionage. We talk about human nature, culture, and the power of human capital and networking. Really fun conversation with Pete. I really think you're going to find his work very fascinating. Again, get ready for another great episode of the Better Than Rich Show with Pete Turner. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the show, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from us, you can follow us on Instagram at @better_than_rich and join our Facebook group at The Better Than Rich Show. Thanks again for listening. We look forward to seeing you next time. And remember, leave today better than you found it. Welcome back to the Better Than Rich Show. I'm your host today, Mike Abramowitz, and we are here with Pete Turner. Pete, welcome to the Better Than Rich Show, brother.
Hey, man, thank you. I knew it took us a little bit of time to get this all sorted out. I was traveling, and you know what it's like to run a show, and you gave me some grace yesterday, and I appreciate it. I owe you not only thanks for being on the show, but thanks for that grace. It means a lot to me.
Oh, it's the least I can do, man, especially with reading your bio. If your bio sucked, then maybe I wouldn't have had much grace for you, but I'm just kidding. I mean, listener, this dude is a fascinating, fascinating story. I know if I'm reading this correctly right now, Pete, you are currently producing several different documentaries right now. Is that correct?
Yeah. They're all in the form of pre-production. You just kind of brick them together. It's not as simple as like flicking on a camera. All of the things you have to do in a business, you have to do. Every project is a business. You literally have an LLC for each project. And so you've got to be ready to approach these major people or major corporations to convince them to give you money or to buy your product. And you only get so many cracks at it. And so you have to be 100% ready. And so you're just bricking together all of these things, marketing and PR and all this stuff all goes into it. And so all of the pre-work for that, colors, themes, sounds, people, all that stuff all matters. And that's where we are right now, is just building these things. It's an incredible journey to put these things together. And I never knew I was going to be in this place. It wasn't like I started out in high school, like, this is what I'm going to be at, you know, but here we are doing it. It's crazy.
I want to park here for just a moment, because there's not every day that someone is able to dedicate their resources, time and energy to put on a documentary. Nevertheless, several documentaries. So I would like to hear, number one, what are some of these documentaries? What was the inspiration to create these? Like, why did you decide to pursue this aggressively? What was the reasoning behind it? What was the origin to get you to want to do the documentaries? And I'd also like to get to a point of like, what have you noticed? What are they about? Like, what are you going to accomplish with this? Like, what is the outcome, the desired outcome of these? So you could go in whatever direction you want, but I'm truly interested in hearing some of the origin here.
Some of this defies convention. I have a show, right? So just like you do, and folks will try to tell you like, this is how you have a show and this is how you do it. So my show, the Break It Down Show, is about 10 years old. We passed 10 years last fall, and we got 2,000 episodes. We didn't know why we were starting it. We just wanted to do it and just kept growing. And we had an idea what direction we were going, but that changed and that changed. And we were like always trying to figure it out. And as we went along, we just amassed this body of people that we knew and this network group more powerful. And gosh, we know all kinds of people now because of it. The market has kind of evolved. Like, hey, write a book, get a lead funnel. Like all of these things have kind of come along afterwards. But I've always said, hey, first, can you do these things, right? And so I'm talking about the show right now because you don't know necessarily where you're going. So can you actually create something? Can you and I partner up and actually make appointments, show up for them, create something, and repeat and repeat and repeat so that you can build a body of work? So maybe leads is what you need, but maybe not. And maybe building leads just isn't worth your time. Maybe it's better to buy leads. Maybe it's better to do something else altogether. My show continued to be a great opportunity thing. So I could meet people, I could go on adventures, I could amass like this powerful network. So like if you were to say, hey, Pete, do you know someone who? I probably do. And if not, I know someone who knows that person, right? And so I took my 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon and I shrunk it down to one, maybe two people, and I can get you in contact with a lot of people. And that's what my show did, was it created this opportunity. And so I know I've got books everywhere. I've got more books than I know what to do with. And all of these books are potential projects to create something else. And that's where it started to occur to me, like, hey, at some point, I've got to connect incredible storytellers to incredible storytellers. And I was this logjam fixer. So I can go into logjam and I can pry on it because I know the right person to help me get the right bar to move that log to see if that project had energy. And so I've gotten pretty good at prying loose logjams. And that's what holds up a lot of these projects. So you might be the world's best storyteller in this genre, but no one else knows you exist. Well, I can put you next to someone who tells stories and will be excited because people want to tell a story that you're excited about rather than the story their agent brings them. Agents are great, right? Agents trying to get you paid. But sometimes you're just like, I'm going to just tell a story about passion and incredible things. And so I've sort of found that there's a crack there that I can fill because of my show. I didn't know that after 1 year. I didn't know it after 5 years. I had a sense of it. But now I'm like, oh my gosh, there's a whole marketplace here of great people, great ideas. We're all saying to Hollywood, hey, enough with these franchises. Franchises just code for sequels after sequels and redos of sequels. And okay, great. There's all these stories sitting on the shelf that haven't been made. I think I'm a guy that knows how to get these things made.
When I hear a documentary, my mind immediately goes to like a Netflix documentary, right? Like that's where my mind goes. So what would you say to someone that says, what's the so what? Like if I have a podcast, why would I want to create a documentary? Is there an outcome? Is there a so what for you or for what message you're trying to get out to the world? Is it, I want to have a million people watch this, or I want to have this so my kids can see their dad create something that's bigger than just me that can last beyond just, you know, a podcast. Like, because this is a cool differentiator. Not everyone would be willing to invest their resources, time, money, and energy to create these productions. Like you said, it takes a lot of going back and forth, raising capital, getting rejected, getting back up, right? So what's the so what for you? Where's the emotional juice lie for you to make this a reality?
Yeah, it's a great question. And again, one of the things that the show has kind of taught me, right? One of the lessons is I like to create value for people, for things. And if I hear someone talk about a project and I don't hear value, then or I can't bring value, I don't get involved. But I sense value. I think, oh, I can help with this. I can make this connection. I can't make that connection work if those two people won't do it. So sometimes I'll come in and I'll rub backs and I'll go, you two really ought to work together. Let's all get lunch. And I'll reveal the value to them if they don't see it. Or I'll give them that nudge to make them that spark. I'll go out there and I'll rub the magnesium off the igniter and I'll go, look, you know, and then boom, there's a deal or something will happen. I get a lot of value out of that. And those repeated things, I'm just planting seeds. I'm trying to always be valuable. I'm going to try to find a way to be valuable to you. You know, I'm going to try to bring you things over time. It may not be tomorrow, it may not be next month, but I'm always trying to bring value. And so when I see an author who's pouring his heart or her heart into a project, into this book, and they're telling their story, the story of their life, maybe they're going to write one book, maybe they're going to write 10 books in their life, probably not many more than that, right? But the book is so rich and you read it and you're like, this really deserves something else. You know, how do I help them fix that? And they don't have the network that I have. I can add value to them. Of course, there's an exchange of value if we get this thing done. But if there's energy in that story and I create value, now I'm starting to win, you know, and I'm at least giving an effort. And I'm not a big corporation, right? And so it's easy for me to say, yeah, let's take a stab at this. Let's see where it goes. And most projects, by the way, most projects die. They don't have the energy. They don't survive contact. But you have to go through that iteration to see if a project has enough energy to get past step 1, 10, 15, 27. And the ones that graduate, well, they get done.
Well, what would you define a successful graduation for one of these projects? Like some of them you said die. What would be a thriving example of like, this is really what we want to get accomplished?
I mean, yeah, like you said, like a Netflix documentary, one that sells to Netflix for like a 2-year contract, right? And then I get another check because now HBO has purchased it. And you're like, hey, we got paid again on that project. And then, oh, a couple of years later, like, hey, by the way, it's back on Netflix again for another 2-year round. You're like, hey, I'll take as many checks as they'll give me. You know, that's ultimately what you want, right? all of this. This is a long process. It's ponderous. And you're like, is this thing ever going to work? You know, and then all of a sudden you get the phone call and boom, that log that you tried to pry on has unlocked. So you have to be patient. You have to be ready to put effort in when effort is needed. Sometimes there's no effort to do in someone else's job and you're not in any way of control of it. And the more pestering you do, the less the log is going to move. So you have to be patient. But that's what it looks like is you're selling movies and the movie is getting sold and people are getting paid.
So I guess what I'm fishing for, Pete, full transparency, I'm fishing for the deeper meaning behind the what. What I just heard was, I'm doing this. The what is, Netflix gets it. We get a 2-year contract here. We get my checks from here, checks from here, checks from there. What I was fishing for here, here's why I'm asking this. When The Sound of Freedom came out, they were campaigning on podcasts and talking about the, you know, and I was listening to him on Tony Robbins. You know, I was listening to, his name is slipping my mind right now, but on Jordan Peterson and Lewis Howes. And I was listening to the story and whatnot. I was like, I can't wait to see this movie because there's a meaningful impact behind the story that it's attempting to tell. And I wanted to be a part of it. In fact, sponsored and bought 5 tickets for other people because it's like, I want to support the movement and I want to support the movie. And it wasn't a documentary, it was a motion picture, but the concept behind the why was more impactful for me. And I think some of the listeners that are listening to the show, potentially what I'm trying to fish out is, what is the impact behind doing this? So what? All right, great. Netflix picks this up. People watch it. But the viewer is really deciding. Netflix isn't deciding. Netflix says there's demand for this documentary. So therefore, we're going to give you these checks because we want people to watch our platforms. But like, why do people watch this? What is the so what? What is the why? What is the juice behind this that we're trying to help society? How is this helping humanity? Is it helping humanity? Maybe it's not, but that's essentially what I'm fishing for.
Yeah, no. And it's a great point because ultimately the checks are a byproduct, right? Like if I've done my job, the energy is there. It's obvious. And it's like, yeah, this is important. Like I'll give you an example. Here's one of the books. It's called The Blues. It's my buddy, Chris Thomas King. He's a blues musician and he's written this history of the blues and it tears down the false structures of what we think the blues were and how they came about. And you want to talk about a redefining of what we understand, like this American invention done by folks who are Black in New Orleans. It's an amazing story, but it allows us to actually understand where this music comes from. And it's powerful. And these folks who have been degraded in terms of what they were capable of doing are now lifted up. And so it's powerful. And Chris is able to play, but also tell the story. It's just this beautiful thing that you can create a bigger impact. Yeah. So the story is impactful in those ways. There's another one that I have where there's a whole community of people that I want to bring in because it is service to a community. So there's all of these things where it's not just a story. It's a story that matters for several reasons. I'm definitely looking for that. I'm looking for one of them is a baseball story and it involves folks in the Caribbean. I want this to be a Dominican story because the guy's from the Dominican Republic. I want it to be told by a person from the Dominican. I want it to be funded by people from the Dominican so that it's their story. It's, you know, they're controlling the narrative instead of somebody else. These are the things that matter so that we are staying as rooted in the story as we can. I think that there's richness in those kind of stories that you see like these heroes getting their voice lifted up. But also the people that love the heroes or are of the heroes, that they're the ones helping tell the story. And we're slowing down to do that instead of just cranking something out because, hey, this is the next book we're going to do. No, you're right. We're putting richness in that. And that really is what's amazing about that is I've got so many people on my network that are like, hey, this fits you. What do you think? And I always thought like, are you interested in being interested? Because when the time comes, I'm going to ask. And they're like, yes, I love your passion for the story. And then I send them the book and they read it. And they're like, oh, Pete, this is so great. You're right. This is exactly on brand for me. So I've got people on brand for them getting involved in these projects. We're looking to try to tell stories that make sense in a lot of different ways. We're not just trying to get checks, right? Of course, we're trying to get paid, but I want to get paid in a way that allows communities to come together and tell these stories that do matter. So yes, there's tons of that in these stories. And these are the projects that move forward. It's projects where you're like, this would be really neat. Those ones don't survive. I'm asking people who are busy making things to make my thing with me. And if it's just a thing that gets a check, they can get that from somebody else. But I'm like, no, look at this. Look how amazing this story is. And they're like, yes, I've been dying to do something exciting like this. That's what I'm trying to find are stories like that.
I'm glad I asked the, sometimes I'll ask the second and third question to get to the juice, because that's true. And what it reminded me of, I know you mentioned like a baseball player. I recently was scrolling. I came across the Shohei Ohtani documentary on like Disney Plus, or, you know, I was scrolling and I saw it. I was like, I know the name. I don't know anything about his story, but after watching the documentary, it wasn't like great quality, so well done, but hearing the story and the background, being in Japan and seeing how he came here, and he's the first player to ever do what he's done in the history of baseball. Like, you're right. It is inspiring to someone like my 3-year-old who I watched it with, right? To maybe want to do something that's never been done before, or be willing, right. especially if my son got into baseball, it's like, wait, I could be a pitcher and a hitter. That's possible for me. And like, that's the inspiration. I'm sure Shohei's making money and his producer's making money and other people are making money. They sold it to Disney right. Plus. I think it's on Hulu too. Great. But the bigger impact on it is it creates dreamers for the next generation of baseball players, or not even playing baseball. I don't play baseball, but it creates the paradigm shift of what's possible, and to break a status quo that's been for over 100 years. I mean, 100 years when Babe Ruth was playing. Like, that's awesome. I'm not even a baseball fan, but I watched it. So I believe that what you're doing, there's merit to it. I'm really glad that you shared that, whether it's music or sports or anything that exists, just showing the background emotional juice of what has taken place. One of which, I let me kick it to you before I tell you what I wanted to say. Is there anything that you want to click on? It seemed like you want to click on something there.
No, you're nailing exactly. I'm trying to answer like a very... There's so much stuff. I get excited about these things, man. And when I'm talking about what is important to me about these things, I am telling stories. And so like one of them is a boxing story, right? But it's not a boxing story. It's the history. It's the origins of boxing. And so when I'm talking about it, there's an element of bare knuckles versus gloves. And so I'm like, I'm putting on the glove, right? And I'm waiting for the person to start to see the movie in their eyes. You know, and they're like, oh yeah, right. And then when they start to pantomime back to me, like, okay, you're getting it. And so I start telling the story and they start performing it. That's what I'm looking for, is if I can get these kind of emotional responses. I'm like, you already know this is cool. It's this old timey fighting, you know, when you're like fighting like this. It's this exciting stuff that if I'm able to gather people like that who are interested in this field and professional in making parts of it, and they're like, I'm not even a fight fan, but Pete, I'm so excited about this project. If I put people like that together talking about this time in history that no one ever talks about, oh my gosh, you know, now when we go approach super famous person X with a big checkbook, or company Y with the checkbook, now I can say, I've got all these people that are fired up to make this thing. It only costs this much to do it. And they're like, oh my God, yeah, I've rallied these people and I'm using emotion. I call it affect over effect, right? If I've got emotional response to my stimuli, if my storytelling of the story is good, then I believe that I can unlock these log jams faster and get people on board and going, yeah, let's get this thing made, because this, and the story is good, right? The story isn't just boxing. It's so much bigger. And there's all kinds of elements to the story. It's not just, as here was a fight one day. Like, there's so much more in the story. And I can always like, what else is there? And I'm like, oh, let me just tell you how much more is there, you know, and I can give them these images. That's what we're talking about, right? That emotional response to stimuli, that affect. That's what I'm going for all the time.
Well, I'll tell you, the thing I wanted to say before is there's one documentary that has reframed my mind and my wife's mind. And that's why I like this conversation about documentaries, because it does have the power. There's like the Forks Over Knives, and there's like the Food Inc. and some of these more controversial type of documentaries. But there is one in particular. I don't know if you've heard of it or not. It's like banned. All right. Like, it's so hard to even find. But have you ever heard of Zeitgeist?
No, I don't think so. No.
Okay. I feel like you'll appreciate this. And listener, if you haven't, I just Googled if there's a way to find it. And it looks like I went to Zeitgeist. I just typed it in. And on YouTube, it's 2 hours and 41 minutes. There's 1.1 million views. I am shocked it is on YouTube, honestly. I don't think this is actually the real... No, this isn't even it. I don't think this is the real one. No, this isn't the real one. Anyway, it is so controversial. It is so hard to find. That's how controversial it is. I mean, they hit on religion. They hit on war and the money behind war. They hit on 9/11, some stuff that was exposed around it. They hit on, I would say those are the big three of like the money behind war and how we get into war and what has happened on the war. Like, behind the scenes, some cover-up stuff. It's very much, people would say, conspiracy theory. But either way, whether somebody believes it or not, to create a documentary where someone can at least get exposed to things that aren't typically talked about, to allow someone to say, huh, I never thought about it like that before. My curiosity for you, with all of that framework, do you feel called to that? I mean, you have a history in being a spy, a combat spy, 1,000 missions, right? I mean, you have a history of working internationally for 20 years. You've seen things in the world that not many people have got a chance to see. When I was here and initially with the documentary, I thought for sure you would want to be like, I want to expose some of the shit that nobody else will ever get to experience and see because of the stuff I've seen. And essentially, your version of maybe it's a controversial type of documentary. But again, I didn't know exactly where we were going to go, but I at least wanted to create a space around controversy. I mean, I think that that is important for some of this stuff, where it's not the mainstream media with their one-sided agenda, regardless, depending on what station you watch, we want you to see only this. Like, actually, I want to create something that's unique, what my perspective is, and another perspective. And this, there's an option C, D, E, and F that you can think differently about the same thing. Let me kick it to you. What do you say about this?
I can't talk about every project that I'm working on. Some of them were past the point of, hey, you can't talk about these anymore, you know? Because when they're early, they're young, it's like they may not exist in 2 weeks. Who knows, right? But some of them are further down the pipe and we'll see if they survive. But yeah, there are other projects. There are some important things to discuss because there has been some mistakes made and we have to talk about these things because everything's on the table when you lose wars. I'm often critical of my military peers, especially ones with stars on their shoulders. And I'll say, you all are O for your career. And if you're O for your career, well, how do we fix that? By the way, I'm O for my career. You know, like there's not a whole lot of we won, you know, like that's, there's not a lot of that. And so how do we withstand that storytelling? And we have centers for lessons learned internally within the military world, but I don't know that we've learned those lessons. And so all right, we're going to tell some stories. And there is some of that in there. There's only so much I can talk about with that. So I delicately, I stepped to the side of that. But yeah, so we're working on that. And that is, again, these projects are ponderous, man. You want to move them forward fast, but they can only move as fast as they move. And the market dictates a lot of this stuff too, as far as when you can release something and how you can release it. It is a process and it does not move when Pete pushes that log. Those logs are huge.
Well, to that point, like we've talked about on the show pretty much just about anything when it comes to this stuff. And I try not to voice my opinion because my opinion is irrelevant. I just try to create topics of interest that somebody else can say, oh, there's another way of looking at the same thing, where there is a real, what I would say, a dilemma when it comes to censorship, where people can't voice something, or if they want to expose something, it's like, no, that's not truthful. We're going to shut it down. Where it's like, I get it. If it's going to create some sort of problem, maybe it's like, yeah, yell fire in a building that's actually not there that actually can create chaos and whatnot. But like, we're not talking about stuff like that. We're saying, I saw this, my lens, I experienced this. This is my spin on this. This is another's take on this. Are you witnessing that there are people saying, we don't want you to say that? Like, we don't want that out there. We don't want the world to know that. We don't want people to see this. So therefore, we're not going to press forward with this project. Does that exist? Are you noticing that from your seat?
I want to say that I'm sure that that's true in some circumstances, in some pathways. It is also true in ways that you might not expect, where the people who are funding a project are like, this is hyper risky for me, in ways that we have to all appreciate. Just because the story needs to be told, it doesn't mean that that person's like, I don't want this story told, you know, because it is not comfortable to tell every story. So there's a lot of things, a lot of roadblocks you have to deal with. And sometimes you have to find funding. And someone is like, I do not want to be the one that funds this project. I think it's great. It should be told. But where I once was interested, I am now uncomfortable because look, bad news is bad news. And it's really hard to get reliable. Everybody thinks it's great until you like ask for the check. And then they're like, oh, you know what? Now that I'm thinking about this, there's quite a bit of risk here, right? And so the risk, the reward, all of these things, it's tough. I'll be honest, it is tough to push back against something and we can watch the news and see what happens when people go against the grain on things. And I'm not saying that I'm going against the grain on things. I'm just saying that when you bring bad news and people don't like it, it's right to say, if you're a very comfortable spot in life, it's very right to say, I like the level of comfort I have. I'd like to make a difference, but I don't want to make this difference.
It's a good response because, you know, some people try to say, oh, I want to change the world. I want to change global warming. I want to change peace on earth. I want to influence, right? And it's like, what is within my sphere of influence? What is within my reach? And what's interesting enough is, hey, maybe it's within my reach to like fund this project, but maybe it also debilitates my opportunity to support what is actually within my reach. Because even if I back this project and fund it, maybe it actually doesn't create the change or the solution that we want. It's almost like if we surveyed, I think we talked about this on the show, of like, would you want to know if your spouse cheated on you? And it's like asking, you know, somebody, and it's like, well, yes, I want to know, but the consequences of me knowing are actually greater than me knowing. It's this desire to know, but would you still stay with the person? I'm not saying I don't know the answer to that for the public, but it's just the question. It's the same thing. My business, my coach initially asked me, he said, if you found out what happened after you died, would that change how you lived? It's like, I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Like some people just be like, great, this is what happens. I'm still going to live the same way I lived. So it's like, these people that are spending these dollars or investing in these projects, I get it. I do understand where they're coming from. I also understand that if someone has a passion about creating some sort of change in the world, we also need to not put our money where their mouth is, but the change starts with the people. I really absolutely love what you're attempting to get accomplished. And I wasn't sure on the scale of that, but either way, listener, as you're hearing this, whether it's the inspiration of my little rants here or what Pete is attempting to get accomplished, you know, change starts with us. Even if it's conversations like this, maybe it's not the checkbook, but I don't know. There's something here around this. If there's anything else that you want to share under the documentary stuff, we can. But I would love to peel back some of these layers of being a combat spy, of some of the stuff you did witness with espionage and modern conflict, and some of the things that you, from your lens, where maybe it's not going to be in a documentary, but something we could kind of peel back on this conversation today.
The one thing I'd say to close this, I had a lunch day before yesterday with the city manager from the hometown where I grew up, and we were talking about these making changes, right? And folks always talk about they oughta, right? But he's a city manager. And I was talking to him like, if you get you and 11 friends at the city level, boy, you know, and I'm talking a town of 30,000 people, right? You can have a big impact in terms of what can happen. And so when you think about that, like, well, I can get 10 friends together. I can get 11 friends together. Pete, what will we do? Well, I don't know. What do you want to do? And go to the city manager and like, hey, there's 12 of us. Money, time, we've got some of these things together. We'd like to make this change, or even better, hey, city manager, how can we help you? And these things are possible. And so it doesn't have to be a world-changing documentary. It really can be, how can we improve the lives of the people in our hometown? The scale doesn't have to be grand. It really can't be just getting a group of people and saying, we're going to go make this change. And then, by the way, test yourself and make sure that the change you thought you were going to make is still there in a year, 2 years, 3 years. Because if you're getting it wrong, well, it's on you to make sure you get it right.
That's a good thing. It's a perfect point. And that's something that people appreciated about what we did in Tampa. We created PB&J for Tampa Bay, where we provided 100,000 meals to less fortunate. And there's still homeless people. There's still people that need food. You know, it's not like we solved the problem on the grand scheme, but we did provide 100,000 sandwiches. We had 1,000 plus volunteers that came out. Different partnerships and collaboration did take place. And I started 2015, and there's still feeding frenzies happening to this day because of this movement from a college kid who broke up with his girlfriend that said, you know, let's get off self and on purpose. And it's like, cool, let's go feed some people. Yeah. So it's like, movements do start with the individuals. And that's why I'm a firm believer in that. We do need to act on some of these decisions. So it's like, we ought to, well, let's take a first step, one bite of the apple at a time. So Pete, let's go in this direction. I mean, again, there's so much that we could unpack with this combat spy stuff, but whatever is most relevant as far as like, you want to talk about the Taliban, you want to talk about any stories that you're like, all right, here's like a story that not many people would understand or know, or this is something that I experienced that kind of peels back the curtain a little bit, something that's maybe a little risque, something you're like, man, this is a cool experience that no one else would understand, or no one else, you're not going to hear someone else tell you something about this. If you could give us some of that juice, I would appreciate it at least.
Yeah. So the thing that probably would surprise most people is that it is more dangerous for me on the American camp in terms of like, nah, I'm not going to get shot or anything, but the work, I've got to balance this equation, right? And I'm terrible at math, but I'll say like, you know, it's like a quadratic equation where I'm constantly trying to figure out what the solution is, right? So going into town for sure has its risk. And there's elements there. Like you've got the government that we're trying to stand up and work with. You've got the locals who I'm trying to understand what their needs are. It sounds a lot like building a film. I'm also trying to understand and gather and connect to the enemy. All of that is a lot of work. But if I'm irrelevant in the staff room, if I'm irrelevant to the commander, if I don't connect with the sergeant major, man, I'm at risk. They'll kick me out of theater. They'll be like, hey, Pete causes problems because I bring bad news. I've got four basic jobs. It's to help the commander win more and lose less, and help the enemy lose more and win less. And sometimes I can like circle them all in one task and get all of those things to happen. But when you show the commander where he's losing more, it makes people mad. And they will circle and stab you. You'll be like, et tu, Brutus? I'm like, you will get killed by your own people, metaphorically speaking. And so I have got to manage the relationships, the networking on the camp, and spend a significant amount of time there so that when I do go off the camp, it's worth something when I come back. Because if I come back and I'm like, hey, all this bad stuff is happening, when we go out and do things, it's not working like you think it's working. So when you have, when you go feed a bunch of people in Tampa, Pete goes back a week later and I'm like, hey, all those sandwiches, I found them all in a dumpster. No one ate anything. They actually threw them away. You'd be like, what? What are you talking about? We got pictures of people eating sandwiches. And I'm like, I'm just telling you what I saw. And then I talked to these 10 people and then it would blow your mind. I would do similar things. I would go out and we would have these operations in Afghanistan. Like, hey, you know, we're connecting people to the government. We painted this building. So I'd go, all right, let me go back to that area. And I'd go back to the area. Like, what happened here 10 days ago? And they would tell me anything except for we got connected to the government. And so these kind of stories, when I bring them back and it doesn't tell the story that the commander was expecting, he's desperate to know that. But the staff is not desperate to have that told. And they reject that reality. You would never imagine that to be true, but it's very dangerous for me to tell this truth because most everybody doesn't want to hear it and they don't believe it. And so then I got to go out and be like, hey, look, any operation you do, I'm glad to go out with you guys. I'm also glad to go back. And so I will help check, make sure that you're actually getting these things done the way you want them to get done. And I'll have like all these fights all the time with people. And I'm trying to help. I'm not against you guys. I'm just saying, if you think all these sandwiches are getting eaten, I'm here to tell you they're not.
I mean, you, just to pique the curiosity, you don't look like someone who is going to blend really perfectly in Afghanistan. Did you have to like get really costumed up, you know, makeup and all the works? No. Or were you portraying just an American tourist or something? Or
I'm just Pete, and I'm often with just in a uniform. I don't wear like an army uniform, but I have like a fatigue uniform sometimes. But usually I just wear exactly what you see now. I've got a ball cap on. I've got like a t-shirt and some jeans, right? A lot of times I'll walk around with the military.
Active?
It depends on the year. But yeah, I was either with or in the military when I was doing these things. Right. And so I'm not hiding at all. And if they ask me, like, are you a spy? I say, yes, I am. I'm here to ask questions and help people. And if you have any questions I ask, you don't like, don't answer them. I'm out 100% open. I use my real name and everything. Because the thing I learned a long time ago is they talk about us just like we talk about them. And so wherever I go on the battlefield, they need to know the same dude that they all talk about. And so I'm always honest because I don't want to be like, I'm Ricky. I'm, you know, and like be this mysterious person. I'm honest 100% all the time.
So here's an interesting question. Are you enlisted in the military or are you a contractor that the military is hiring?
Yes, both of those things. And sometimes I'm sworn in the military as what they call a Department of Army civilian. So I'm still in the military, but I'm not in the unit. And so I'm there as a civilian, but I'm in the military. I don't have all the responsibility of like, I don't have to be in formation and everything, right? But I'm still working for a commander. So there's a lot of different ways to be in the military. And a lot of that has to do with legal things. You know, like, can you carry a weapon? Contractors really can't carry weapons. And so they're trying to solve different puzzles. It doesn't really matter how I'm employed. It really matters what the mission is and what the commander wants me to do. And once they realize my particular skill set, they're like, Pete, go do what you want to do because you're giving me information that no one else is giving them. Because guess what my job is? They give them information that no one else can give them. And so I get access to the battlefield because I'm good at what I do. that again has to be balanced with surviving that information flow, because I'll outproduce most everybody else because I'm better at getting information than they are, because I've just got more, I've got more experience, right? Most everybody in the military graduates up and away from the field. I spent time in the field and just was able to stay at the ground level when they all had to go do other things.
Can you give me a Cliff Notes version of the origin? Like, you got out of high school and went into spy school, like, yeah, you know, like, you know, and then did you have to go do boot camps and all this? Like, what is that origin? Yeah. Like, how does one become a spy? Like, forgive my That's ignorance and naive. I've never heard this because I think it's different.
We only know about movies, right? Yeah. So I graduated from college. It was tough to get a job. And I was pushing shopping carts in the rain at Costco. And I'm like, I've got to do something else. I've got to do something else. And so I went from never thinking about it to being in the military in 30 days. I tested very well. And a lot of people do, but I tested very well. And in my field, if you test well, you get counterintelligence. And so I just signed up. And then I went to what you would call spy school, which is really, at my time, it's always evolving what they teach you. But they taught me a lot of report writing and surveillance and some basic source operation, but really basic stuff. The Army wants to kind of train you enough to get you out of there to go learn what you're going to learn. Because my job is like about 150 different jobs. So you don't know what job you're going to go walk into. And then you kind of find your way from there. And so I found myself in Bosnia. And it turned out that what I was good at doing was going out in hard places. I'm a physical dude. I'm an athlete growing up. Personable. My job is to be Johnny Good Time. Like, if they're like, hey, we're having a party, and I'm like, let's go there, let's do shots, let's hang out, let me get invited back for dinner, that's my job. And then I get to know people, and then they introduce me to their friends, and they introduce me to their friends, and if I can get three introductions away, now I'm meeting the people that I need to know that nobody else in the unit will ever get to meet. That's what I'm good at doing. And so because I'm able to do that, and because I just keep doing it at that ground level instead of getting promoted up and away, and because I keep coming back in different forms in the military, I stay at the ground level. It wasn't that I wasn't good at the job. It's just I didn't stay in the military in a traditional sense. I got to continue to go outside the wire when other guys get stuck to a desk. And so that allowed me to stay out. And I become this multi-echelon black belt at what I do. And so when other people come out, they're like, I'm a collector. And I'm like, you're an adorable little baby. You've got all of like 200 missions and you go collect and then we'll see what happens. They can't compete with me, right? Because I can go out faster. I can more efficient. I know these things better. And really what the job is sales, it's TV reporting. It's all of these kind of things. And my degree is in TV radio. So I had all these advantages that made me good at being uncomfortable, good at writing reports, good at meeting people. I'm already Johnny Goodtime anyhow, so I have all these things that go together, and I found myself in the right spot. What I'm bad at is being in garrison, behaving properly in front of the command, and all those things. But like, hey, kick Pete off the camp, and let's see what happens. I'm good at that.
Thank you for the origin. I appreciate that because I had no idea what to expect there. Does that mean you are technically active military in a branch? Would you, like, if someone says, like, if I have a conversation with a buddy, it's like, I served 5 years in the Army. Would that be what you would say? I'm active military, or?
My story's a little complex. Yeah. So I was 5 years of active. I did 2 years in the reserves, and then I did some contracting time. And then I also did some time with the Department of the Army where I was sworn. Mm. I'm in the Army, right? But I'm in the Department of the Army. And again, that's when I'm a civilian. So I was in the Army three different ways. And then I worked on contracted jobs where I worked for a private company that held a contract, but always counterintelligence, right? So I'm always working in that counterintelligence field.
Do you ever watch like the Bourne Identity movies or any of those types of movies and be like, there's a small piece of truth to some of this stuff? Like that, you know, again, like it's sometimes Hollywood desensitizes us to like, no, that's just a movie. But there's always that piece of me. It's like, I don't know. I think that shit's going on, you know?
In my field, I'm pretty physical. When I say I'm an athlete, I'm not like a professional athlete, but I'm a good athlete, right? You can put me in a basketball court, I can play with guys who are way better than me, right? So keep that in mind. I boxed in college. I wasn't a good boxer, but I boxed in college, right? There's a lot of guys in my field that would be terrified to box. In my field, there are people that are puzzle solvers. They are operational people who plan things. And then there's guys like me that they kick off the camp. So I'm one of the guys that kick off the camp. When it comes to like Jason Bourne, I look around when I'm in a mindset of doing these things. I know how many people are in the room. Even if there's 180 people, if there's 180 people in the room, guess what I'm not going to do? I'm not going to start a fight. I'm just going to leave. you know. So that's like one of the first things you need to know. If something does happen and I'm in a mindset of like, I need to be ready for things, I'm going to look for something that I can smash in someone's face or throw across the room, or the person I can pick up and heave and cause a commotion in the other direction, and then I'm going to leave. I can shoot well, but if I shoot things or shoot people, then I have to leave that area completely because I'll now be like recognized, right? Because they talk about who you are. And so again, like my job is not to be someone who fights. My job is to be someone who's using their mouthpiece to get what they need and to create relationships and trust. So that's the biggest thing that I had to figure out is trust. And so you don't see that in the Bourne Identity. It's like, I'm going to build trust. I can drive well. I've been taught how to drive a little bit. So these kind of things all kind of go into that pile of things. But a lot of it is self-taught, and a lot of it is the stuff that you don't know that you have these skills. So you just kind of, you read the books, you take courses, you add to your pile of things. And I would say every counterintelligence agent is different than the next one. And the ones who are good, we all respect other ones who are good. The ones who didn't get a chance to do things, there's a lot of jealousy with those guys. And so they often talk bad about other people. But if you've done the job, at some point you're like, anybody who's done the job has done the job. And you did what you were allowed to do, and you got as good as you could get. And that's sort of how I look at it, is there's some truth in Jason Bourne, but if you're fighting that much, we have a different job, Jason and I. And so sometimes it overlaps, but most of the time it doesn't. My job is to build trust. My job is to get people who are the evilest, most dangerous people out there to trust me, and maybe either turn them into an asset for me or just get them to be a little less angry when we're around and so they don't harm us. And those are the big goals.
That's cool. I appreciate it, Pete. Thanks for sharing. Before, we like to ask every guest three questions and give you a chance to tell us a little bit more about where we can stay in touch. But before I do that, is there anything we didn't talk about today or hit on that you just want to make sure we bring to the surface before we start transitioning a little bit towards the exit?
You know, the only thing is just, I've got this nonprofit that I'm building up slowly over time. It's called the Ground Truth Center, groundtruthcenter.org. And I'm just trying to work on shrinking the gap between theory, policy, and the actual ground truth, right? I'm a ground truth guy, obviously. And so when we make these big decisions, whether it's trying to solve some health problem or solve some war problem, if we have people like me who understand what it looks like on the ground to go do that every day, it helps to shrink that gap. That's what we try to do. So that's the Ground Truth Center. That's the one thing that I'd want to plug specifically here. But other than that, man, I'm ready for your three questions. And this has been a riot. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the first question we like to ask every guest is, what do you think the world needs most today?
To be less divisive. Less time on this device. Get out and talk to humans in real time. They're not as bad as you think they are. They're just not. Get off your device. It's divisive.
Great. And what 1 to 3 books do you think people should read?
I think the new Rick Rubin book on creativity is great. You know, we often worry about our avatar, and there's nothing wrong with that, but sometimes you're the avatar. And if you build the thing, you have a sense, you have a nose for those things. Trust your nose over the audience, because if your nose is accurate, continue to go there. That's a good lesson.
That's great. And last question is, what does it mean to you to be better than rich?
Look, money solves a lot of problems. But if you are able to enrich lives, and if you're able to enrich yourself, it's more than money. You know, you don't need money if you're enriched. And that's the key, I think, is just to invest in things that enrich. And whether it's yourself or others, because if you enrich others, oh my gosh, like there's no form of wealth that's better than that.
It's great. Well, I appreciate that, Pete. I'm sure some individuals are going to want to stay in touch with you and also support the Ground Truth Center. Where could they learn more about the Ground Truth Center? Where could they learn more about you and your podcast, The Break It Down Show?
I'm Pete A. Turner on all social media, mostly on X. I don't do a lot of time on social media, but you can get a hold of me there, or you can just email me, PeteBreakItDownShow.com. Most of my emails all funnel through there. So that's just the headwater. Just go to PeteBreakItDownShow.com and you can get, I'm glad to talk to you.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate your time, Pete. And listener, obviously the show wouldn't exist without you. So we always appreciate you for tuning in. I know I've been saying this on the most recent episodes, because right now Better Than Rich is kind of going through a rebrand. So if you ever see any communication from Time Rich, that is us. And we're really helping high earners and business owners buy back their time to offload their low value tasks, the bottom 20% of their tasks, their administrative, their inbox, calendar, social media. If you need help with podcast production, if you need help with social media management, if you need help with graphic design or video editing, our team will handle all of that for you. So that way you can buy back your time. And if you didn't know, I'm currently doing free 90-day delegation plans to figure out what is that bottom 20% tasks for you. Someone from my team or myself will do those with you. They're 30, 40 minutes. So you can make your way to betterthanrich.com/90-day plan. That's 90-day plan. We would love to poke around. You'll get a 25-page time audit workbook as well, just because we want you to win back your time. So that way, if you wanted to start doing documentaries, or if you wanted to go to spy school, or you know, if you want to do something that Pete has inspired you to pursue, we want you to have time freedom to be able to do that. So if we can do our part to help you with installing our AI-powered virtual assistants, or just give you some counsel, betterthanrich.com/90-day plan. So Pete, thank you so much again. Listener, thank you so much again. And as always, leave today better than you found it. Till next week.
Welcome to the Better Than Rich Show with your hosts, Andrew Biggs and Mike Abramowitz. The Better Than Rich Show helps ambitious leaders who are on a mission to leave the world better than they found it, change their perspective on what's important, increase their income and impact, and systemize their life and business. If you've ever struggled with finding your purpose, have felt disconnected or distracted, or found yourself going through the motions, this show will remind you that what you do matters and will re-inspire you to chase your highest dreams. It's time for you to become better than rich.